Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here is your host of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of The Millennial Dentist.
Yep.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, Coors Light.
And Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper. And we have a very exciting guest, our first female on the podcast,
baby.
Dr. Erin Elliott. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Just finishing up my day here.
It's like a webinar and it's like a webcast and a podcast.
It's really too bad people aren't seeing this video.
Well, it's early. So YouTube is, we want to have a YouTube channel. Do you have a YouTube channel?
For my practice, yes.
Gotcha. Nice, nice.
I'm kind of hip.
Yeah, I'm impressed. That's what I'm kind of seeing. Because like you're not a millennial, but you're pretty hip. All right. So tell us a little about yourself. You know, you're pretty well known, obviously, in the kind of the sleep community. And it seems like that's what's really gotten, you know, that's how I first heard about you. But obviously, there's a lot more to it. You're a very successful dentist. And I kind of just want to talk about, you know, the main reason I wanted to have you on, honestly, was we have a ton of women listeners. And you're the first woman we've had on the podcast. And you kill it. So I kind of wanted to see and hear, you know, from you and your perspective on dentistry.
Well, actually, I think I went to Creighton University Dental School, graduated in 2003. So almost 14 years ago.
Wow. I was like a freshman in high school.
And rub it in. Dr. Sullivan. This is the first time I've ever felt old. I'm almost 40.
Oh my gosh.
That's not bad.
Yeah. A cougar.
She is.
Okay. So what is the definition of a cougar, by the way?
35 and above.
35. That sounds pretty, that's pretty good.
Does that mean like I'm after younger men or does it just
no,
mean
not
that
necessarily. I think it could be, like it's a positive thing, right? Like it could be, I think it's twofold. One, you could be a cougar because you're after younger men, but it could be also, you could be a cougar because younger men are after you. So I think it's like, it could be a compliment.
I'm actually going to look it up on Urban Dictionary, that's a later time.
Urban Dictionary.
All right. So Creighton University, where's Creighton? It's Midwest,
it's in
right?
Omaha, Nebraska. Okay. Yeah. So I think we are about 40% women. But what was interesting is when I moved to Post Falls, Idaho, which is right in between Spokane, Washington and Missoula, Montana, way up in the panhandle of Idaho. I was the third female dentist in town. Yeah. And now there's quite a few, especially there was more in Spokane itself, but in Idaho itself, I was the third. And now I'd say there's probably 10 or so.
Did you go into some with somebody when you graduated or did you start your own practice?
I did. I went in with a gentleman. He is 11 years older than me as an associate. The thing was, we were in a 5-op cruddy practice. The practice itself was wonderful. The building we are a true testament to the fact that the building doesn't define you as a practice. But I used to have to take a running start up over the carpet hump to get to my patient. But fortunately, we built a new practice in 2007. However, when I first started, I had 2.5 days because we just had 5 ops. There wasn't room for 2 dentists. So I used to fly over to Portland and work for my dad's office every other week. And then I worked at the Indian reservation. I temped at a few offices where they were without a dentist until the new one came in. I never wanted to leave my practice. However, I needed to supplement my practice. I, from the beginning, was the breadwinner. My husband stayed home with the kids.
Nice, nice.
So you got married while you were in dental school?
I got married after my junior year of undergrad.
Okay. So before dental school.
You're young.
Were you in junior high then? Or
I wasn't. Kindergarten. So, okay. So,
so wait, go back a second. So your dad was a dentist or is a
yeah.
dentist?
My dad was a dentist. So yeah, he passed away about a year and a half ago.
Oh, shoot. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So did you ever consider going in with him?
You know, no, because I grew up, I tell my patients, I grew up south of Boise in a place called Orange County, California. And because there's a bad connotation towards Californians up here, so I don't like to admit it. But he moved to Vancouver, Washington, which is near Portland, Oregon, when I was in New York State for college. So I never grew up in the place that he landed, and it wasn't home. And Idaho for sure is home. So we kind of handpicked it. I had to work a little harder. Like when I used to go temp for or fly over and work for him, I would say that I was Dr. Warren's daughter, and they would be like, okay, whatever you say, whatever you need, automatic trust. Yeah. It was
you get the benefit of the doubt, right? Like that's what I was saying. Like it's a huge advantage. I mean, it is.
Sure. And when I moved here, you know, I was a female, which I thought and young, I thought people might hold against me. And I also, so I like wore a white coat at all times.
They look at me.
Is that what you wear to work?
No, I wear scrubs. I wear scrubs.
Yeah.
We're pretty casual.
But that's funny though, when you said that, because a lot of my female dentist friends are all wear white scrubs.
You know, I think noticed. It depends though. I think a lot of it has to do with just your personality and, you know, the kind of, you know, are you outgoing? Are you introverted, extroverted? You know, are you confident? You know, and so yeah, whatever. Because ultimately, you got to purvey this confidence to your patients, right? And so,
right. So
if that helps you do it, then yeah.
Well, I completely expected them to be like, when's the dentist coming in? You know, looking past my shoulder. But it wasn't like that. And I think it was because of the confidence and, you know, don't let the blonde hair fool you. I walked in there as if I were the doctor because I was, and it was never a problem as much as I maybe built up in my head. There's times where, you know, some patients will say, no, I prefer a male dentist. But the cool thing is with he's my partner now. I was an associate for many years, but there's times where they tell him straight to his face, I prefer a female dentist, and he's cool with it.
Oh gosh. I tell you one aspect where we've noticed it's awesome having, I could totally see that because we just started about a year ago, got all our hygienists certified to start numbing our patients. And so we were a little worried about, like, you know, kind of letting that control go, you know, how are they going to do that sort of, not necessarily from a male female perspective, but just not being trained. Right. Y'all just naturally are just really good with patients. Right. Just cause I think that's just, you know, just the way we are. And they kill it. I mean, they take the time. Y'all are gentler. Y'all are cuter. And there's lots of reasons, I think, but yeah, that's hysterical.
Just very easy going with patients too. Like they don't really hold anything back, you know?
I will tell you that's probably, I expected when I worked for my dad for him to be like looking at the office, looking over my shoulder, telling me what to do. And he like never even showed up. He was kind of like, woohoo, I got, but I have to, before it was the Christmas break, the semester before we learned anesthesia, and he took me into his practice like on an off day, and I practiced on my sister, sister. But he gave me some tips and tricks, and I'll tell you, I think that's where I build the most confidence in patients and trust is from the very beginning. My hygienist can do anesthetic, but I only ask them when I'm desperate and running behind, which isn't that often.
That's a really good point. I never thought about that.
Yeah. I owe it to my dad so I can brag that I'm really good at injections.
Where do you see the millennial dentists that are females right now compared to the older female dentists that are out there, been working for years? Some of the changes, some of the things you're seeing, some of the things that are going on, anything that's...
Or I guess your perspective on us, just, and it doesn't have to be female, it could be both, right? Just because you definitely are in it. You're not an old person, right? You're hip. I mean, that's the beauty of, you really kind of see probably both sides, which probably makes you really, really dangerous.
Did you guys hear that noise right just now?
No.
Pere is opening a bag of Sour Patch.
Oh, yes. He is eating Sour Patch Kids.
I love Sour Patch.
He has a bowl full right here. This is his consult room.
I'm just going to drink my water.
Yeah.
Water is good.
Starbucks, Northwest.
First of all, what I would say is that when I graduated, I would say I was a female dentist. I don't actually like that term because I actually am a dentist. And I think that with the people that are graduating now, I think it's just becoming more commonplace where it's not that different. It's not that weird. And that's a huge advantage. Whereas I felt I was coming out having to prove something. I don't think I have to as much. You may have to prove something as a whole as being young.
Right. I think that, yeah, that more than anything.
See, that's one of the things I think right now, a lot of dental schools acceptance rate for female dentists or female girl, like getting into dental, it's a lot higher than guys because of their grades and the DAT scores and things like that and GPA. Which makes me think of now in the future, we're going to have more female dentists that's going to happen for sure. I mean, at UT, University of Tennessee, we had about 30-35% ratio and it was keep getting higher and higher. And that's where, but see, the other thing is also when they get in, most of them are now moving towards specializing towards pedo, where we were talking right now a few minutes ago with my assistant. What do you have to say about, like, as far as the general versus specialty and female versus male?
God,
like,
bless them. God bless them. You know, my professor came up to me. It was kind of my middle of my senior year, and he's like, Elliot, because I don't think they knew my first name back in dental school. Elliot, I didn't know you were smart. Why aren't you specializing? And it was honestly,
yeah, you were like fourth in your class, weren't you?
Fifth.
Okay. Oh man. Gotcha.
Dang it. It was more because, well, first of all, I've been married for 5 years and I was ready to start my family and wanted to get going on that. I didn't want to spend 2 more years. I was already paying for a private dental school. And I wanted to settle in and just stop. I felt like a nomad for so long. Then the other is there wasn't anything I was drawn to, honestly. And as a general dentist, that's the beauty of it. You can do what a specialist does. You just are held to a higher standard. And I liked the variety. And Creighton, I think, kind of instills that in you, especially since we don't have specialties there. We kind of did everything. We did nice. Molar endo. We did impacted wisdom.
That's pretty
teeth.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know, we got to do a lot.
Now, is that the only school in Nebraska?
No, there's a University of Nebraska, Lincoln. But most of my classmates were from all over.
How did you know? Did you know what you wanted to do? Like how you wanted to transition your practice? Like what procedures you wanted to do? Or how did you kind of develop that? Just kind of by doing stuff and seeing what you liked?
Well, let's see. I graduated in 03. Started. Yeah, I did. My first kid or my first patient ever, and I would love to say his name because it's ingrained in my head, but you know, HIPAA, but it was 4 anterior pedo extractions and he was 5 years old and he screamed through the whole entire
procedure. That'll cure it.
They were fully rooted. So at that moment, I was very glad I didn't specialize in pedo. I still do. You know, fillings on three-year-olds. I still do extractions and immediate dentures. I am in Idaho, but after all. But again, it's a true family practice where I have blue collar. I had a meth head and a venture capitalist millionaire whose pilot comes to see me, you know, in the chair at the same time. That's why I love the variety. The way I've tailored it is in 09 is discovering sleep apnea. And then in 2013, discovering 6 month smiles. And then, you know, we started placing implants probably in 2011, 2012. I don't place them just because I felt like my partner should do something.
You got to give him something to do. You can't do everything.
Well, he doesn't listen to this, but I will start placing implants, especially with Moody's implant pathway and all that.
But that's like, see, I love that because that's really what we've done. My dad and I, because it's like the best way to build a practice is to kind of do that, like build your in-house referrals. And so, the first thing, one of the first things I took 6 month smiles, May of my senior year. You know, so awesome. That I was still a student. So like as soon as I graduated, he never done ortho in his life. There were patients right there that needed treatment, you know? So it was like that. So I think that's such a great thing because I hear all the time from new graduates and they whine about, well, I've gone on with this associate or this doctor or whatever, and he won't, you know, he does all the crowns, I just do fillings and I'm like, well, have you gone, is there anything he doesn't do? And have you thought about like going and spending the money and learning to do that? Because like it's, and they're like, well, I'm not going to get all the percentage from it. I'm like, who cares? Like, you know, go learn more things.
Well, you know, and that's something I think that we can talk about, especially here, is my time as an associate. It was 8 years before I bought in. And it was because we built this new building and there wasn't, you know, dentistry is a lot of blue sky. And so there was nothing to borrow against, really. And that's right when the economy was
you're exactly right.
So I was able to finally come in with enough capital, and the way we worked it out, we're 50-50. And what a difference that made. Our personalities are a lot alike. He's really laid back, and the patients, they don't mind seeing one or the other.
Do y'all have your patients, his patients, or like practice patients?
We do, but they're the practice patients. Before, when I was an associate, it was like even though we love each other, it was very territorial. I was like, no, this person knows me because of church. I brought them in. And so when he did the new patient exam, I was like, no, that's my patient. It was like, it was a little, like I said, territorial. I wouldn't take any time off. I wouldn't leave early because in case one of my patients came in.
See, I always wondered how that works because I've never been in that.
You're like, that's what you're thinking. You're like, do you not get mad at your dad for stealing something?
Yeah.
Well, even when you buy, I have a friend who is partners, bought into the practice, but it's based off of collections. And that's, I think, dangerous too. It's like when it's 50-50, we work about the same. We don't look down to the penny. It just works really well for our patients too. Because if I'm doing sleep apnea on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and my patient has an emergency, it's okay if they go see Dr. Lynn. It's okay.
Well, and ultimately, like the goal, right, is that like if we build the practice up big enough, there's enough to go around that we don't have to worry about that, right? Like that's kind of my thing. It's like, let's not nickel and dime each other. Like, let's just keep growing this to where.
But what about at the end of the year when you guys look at the production, collection, money, and which one has done more or versus not? Like, how do you guys do that?
We don't really, because I really think that he knows a lot of his production is because of me. Because
people want to come see Aaron Elliott.
No, I'm not bragging, but I'm out in the community more. So I'll refer him my implants, keeping it in house. I don't do endo.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Because they come, and you're like, hey, he does it, but I don't.
So once you start doing the implant pathway and start throwing those screws, you're going to be jumping like, woo.
But the patients win in that too.
You're right.
No, 100%.
And that's the nice part of it. So the one thing that I do wish, and this is my advice to you millennials, since I'm not in that category, is to have an ownership mentality, is don't just show up to work. I went out and recruited my own patients. We actually had an associate that was a new grad, and I really hope he doesn't listen to this, but I called him Princess behind his back.
Well, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of princes out there.
T-Bone had like three princesses, apparently. He's been running through millennials.
Like, do you even like dentistry? Or like you expect us to hand it to you on this like silver platter? And when I came in, I was, like I said, I was out building my own practice.
We're hustling, grinding. And I mean, you would get on Craigslist and post an ad, I need patients. Come on.
No. You know what?
No, listen. I did that in dental school for perio.
Payman's a hustler.
I did that in dental school. I needed perio patients bad. And I got on Craigslist. I saw a posting. I would drive them to dental school, drive them back to get my I mean, that's how I did. I finished my dental school stuff in 3 years instead of four because I wanted to be done.
So you did. So 8 years. So what took? So basically the length was kind of getting everything together. And then with the economy down, is that basically why it was 8 years?
Yeah. And the way we did it, we were able to not go to a bank. And
oh, see, that's awesome.
So I looked in to buying in after five. That was the plan. And there just wasn't enough for me to work more than I could. So when we built the building, then it was time for me to buy in. But the problem is we built this multi-million-dollar building and we had to build up the patients to fill it. Now we're like overflowing. But for me to go to the bank and say, I need $500,000, they'd laugh in my face because I had nothing to borrow against. Everything was held up in the building. So then what I finally did is come in with 10% down, which was basically out of my retirement. And I started, my husband spends what I take home. It's awful.
So does my wife.
OMG. Am I allowed to say that? Yeah. That's not him. It's bad. So secretly, I would.
Did you open up another checking account? Did you have another bank account that you were funneling money to?
No, I did. I didn't until 2 years ago, and that's the beauty. He has no idea what's in it.
This is awesome.
Back then, I would put 10% into retirement, because if you look at the math of putting away money at 25 versus 35,
look at you. I love it. Compounding interest.
Huge.
Yeah.
So I started maxing out what I could from the beginning. That's like the first check you write, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my gosh.
The second thing I did is extend my student loans, because that is a tax write-off. My student loans are 2.85%, but I extended them to 25 years.
Oh gosh. You should, at 2.85, you should never pay off your student loans.
Right.
How
do you get 2.85?
She graduated.
And I took maternity leave. That was 6 weeks of zero pay. That was the other thing. When my associate came in, he was like, so what's my vacation pay? What about?
That's insane. I cannot believe there are people like, it drives me crazy, because like, I hear that and right. I'm like, what are you doing?
It was almost like you put in the time, dude. So I took 6 weeks maternity leave. I didn't get paid. I saved up. So saying that, I borrowed against my retirement money and it's paying back. So on paper, my partner and I make 50-50. But at the end of the day, he takes home half, or he takes home more, I take home less. So it's almost like a stock buy-in. And then every month I pay him a certain amount after tax. So it was kind of like
it's a great deal for him and you. Yeah.
How do y'all negotiate that? I'm sorry, out of curiosity, how do you start, like lawyers or?
We have a consultant that we use that helps with practice management, and then my accountant. And the beauty of my accountant is he looks out for both of us. He almost feels like my father, like a fatherly figure. And so it just works out. And I'm at the almost the end of year six in a 7 year buy-in. Now, to Soli's point on a previous podcast, yes, I listen.
Oh, look at you.
Is to get the valuation, if it's an associateship that you see long term, is to get kind of a valuation beforehand and then what you bring into the practice. So I kind of paid for what I brought into the practice.
Well, absolutely.
But again, we don't nickel and dime each other.
No,
so
yeah.
But it works out.
Well, I did too. That was part of, and I wish we'd talked 3 months ago before I just took a nice loan out with Bank of America and
buy
half my practice. But yeah, God, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well,
and the I love the paying yourself first. So I'm very passionate about all that. And so I like that, echoing those sentiments.
It's hard to do, especially when you want to get you know, in dental school I valet parked. And I was like, this is amazing. Because
I bet you got so many tips.
I loved it because I was the only one that knew how to drive stick. And so I got to drive some pretty interesting cars. But I was thinking, man, I get to test drive without a salesman. I get to test drive the cars that I'm going to be able to afford one day.
Oh, yeah. Aaron Ellie, the badass.
Guess what? I drove a Honda Civic. Even up until I was pregnant with my second son, and I pulled – this is the car I had in dental school. I pulled up next to a patient, and I was waving to Bob. I'm sitting there. We're waiting to turn left, and I see Bob, and Bob rolls down his window, and I have to lean across the passenger seat and roll the window down because it wasn't crank automatic.
That's
and
awesome.
He says to me, what the hell is my – dentist doing driving a car like that?
Awesome.
And I wanted to say, well, student loans, retirement, stay-at-home husband, you know, maternity leave. But we lived within our means for a while. So now the office pays for my car and I drive an Audi. Thank you.
Look at you. Wow.
What type of Audi?
She made it.
I got my first new car after being a dentist my first new car ever in my life, but I was a dentist for 11 years when I finally got that.
And we are, I see so many people buying new cars right out of school with their loans and crap. Oh, ridiculous. I think one of the best, my favorite points you made there kind of throughout the conversation is having more younger dentists and associates having a doctor's mentality, because the whole just coming to work and then leaving when work's done, like there's got to be more to that.
It's not a paycheck. They look at it more, so many millennials. I mean, I'm sorry to say that, but like we just look at it as like how much every two weeks, but don't think about the two weeks I had. When I was working at the first affordable, I was doing, and I'm not kidding, I was doing $20,000 cases. I was taking home $500. Yeah, I was doing $20,000. Every single one of my friends were like, dude, you are stupid. Why are you doing so much? But I was looking at the bigger picture.
You're probably like, look at all the experience I'm getting.
Yeah. And then look at and I would go beyond. I would go beyond doing more and more and more. And now I could do those $20,000 and I take home $20,000.
Are you the one that works for Affordable Dentures?
I was, yeah.
And oh, were you on Justin's podcast?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I remember you.
Yeah, I did that a while back.
What's this dentistry? What that for?
Yeah, we did that podcast with Justin a few months back.
Yeah, because you went to the appointment with your aunt or
Oh my gosh, she's so good.
She's an avid podcaster.
She is. Okay, so tell us.
Have you ever thought about having a podcast?
Oh, Justin keeps bugging me, but no.
You should do it.
No.
A lot of time, though.
If I had anything more to my plate, my husband would kill me.
Well, and that's the problem. It's tricky. I mean, we had no idea how much time it was going to take. My wife's like ready to like kill me. She's like, this damn podcast. She's like, it's
taking
just
a lot more time than I thought.
You spend money on it and doing it. Like,
you don't even have kids yet.
No, I know.
Actually, It's so good that you guys do that. There's people, leaders like you, though, because how are we going to challenge each other? How are we going to get better? How are we going to find out about new things? I would say that as an associate, I wish that he would have, and this is something I should have added to the contract, but I didn't know any better, is him helping me with CE. So I would take any CE that was local, that was cheap. I remember when I went to go learn sleep apnea, I was like, oh crap. Okay. What's the cheapest one? And then I shared a room with my dad, who was the worst snorer in the world. It would save me, $70.
He needed a sleep apnea device probably.
He did. Actually, he's part of my story. Nice. To why I love it so much. But I wish that I would have, if he would have even matched up to a certain amount where I have skin in the game, but would have helped out with that a little bit.
So let's talk about, and I know you don't want to talk too much about it, but I do want to touch up on it a little bit, because I know a ton of my friends, if they don't want to go and learn implants, they want to learn sleep apnea, sleep dentistry. So Can you tell us, how would you break it down? Have you thought of a formula, make it easy? Like, okay, where do they need to go?
It's funny you ask.
I would say it's more a marathon than a sprint when it comes to sleep apnea. You read a lot of articles and see all these things where it's not easy.
She took the glasses off for this part.
She did. Real. She's getting sleepier.
I'm serious. I think that when you go and take a course, what I teach is finding your why, because you're going to come up across some hurdles and you just can't give up. It's not dentistry. It's change. It's outside of your comfort zone. It's medical, not dental. And you're just getting used to dental insurance, which is changing all the time. Now you have to add medical. But it's something that I just wouldn't give up on, even though I think everyone around me wanted me to, but now it's just it's a huge part of my practice. So what courses should you take? All those things, the focus that, I teach with T-Bone. Have you guys heard of him?
Yeah.
Tarun Agarwal, maybe.
Sure, absolutely.
He focuses on workflow. And so we teach together so that it is a little bit more practical to come back to your practice and actually do it. There's still some science that we teach and all of that. However, the question, I love how he states this, is we always get asked the question, well, what appliance do you make? you know what? It, in all reality, I have my favorites. It doesn't matter if you don't have patients to treat. And if you have a patient, what do you do with them? How do you even get them to the point to take impressions? So that's kind of what we like to focus on. What else do you want to know about that?
I think the most important thing about what you said is just, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. It's not one of those weekend courses. Hey, let me go take this course and start treating sleep apnea. Cause that's the thing. I just had my assistant. She was like, oh, ask her about this. And I'm like, I don't even want to know because it's so broad. It is so broad. And if I wanted to invest in learning, I need to start studying, like reading articles, magazine, going weekend courses and coming back and treating patients, having them booked up. And that's not the area that I'm interested in right now at this stage of my life. But I know.
And there was a podcast that he did with Jennifer Lopez was her name. But she was like, she's an associate right now. And she's like, I want to do sleep apnea. I want to get into Botox. I want to do implants. It was like, there is so much that you guys didn't get in dental school.
On just like restorative, let alone all this other stuff.
Right. And now you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to go here and here and here. And so your career is a marathon, not a sprint, even though I hate jogging. I think it's really something that you need to get good at the bread and butter and efficient. I had a senior dental student just come by and visit. She was in the area looking for a job. And our Henry Schein rep set us up because maybe I could mentor her or something. But I was like, so I'm about to go in there and do these fillings and prep them in about 3 minutes. I said, do you want to watch? It doesn't take me 3 hours to do, you know, one class two amalgam like dental school. I think they teach you the most inefficient way. And there's a ton of efficiencies I feel like I've learned over the years to help kind of the new dentist. And that was another thing about my associate. He would never take any advice. I was like, I'd love to help you even how to communicate with patients, but no, he knew it all.
It's the mentality. Like we talk, it's the personality and mentality of where they come from.
Yeah. Now.
We're doing what we can. We're trying. We're trying to, we're trying to do our part.
You tell your wife that you're here.
That's what that is. I've tried to change generation. Okay. I have one quack about. So you just, you're getting a CRAC?
Yes. So we just added CRAC and 3D.
I'm super excited about that. Okay. Yeah, so how... Because that's a huge plunge, an expensive plunge, both 3D and CRAC. Talk about how y'all kind of came to that decision to invest in all technology and what were the tipping points? I kind of want to hear what were the things that held you back at first and then what were the tipping points that got you over? Because we have obviously a lot of our friends are like, man, how can I even think about buying a $100,000 machine, you know, whether it be 3D or CRAC when you've got all this loans and other stuff and whatnot?
Oh, totally agree. The first thing is Dr. Lin already had a CRAC when I came in. I flew to Seattle and took a CRAC course and started doing them. And I was like, these suck. They look horrible.
What year was this? Was this like, this was my red cam days though, right?
It was like 04. Yeah. I was like, I just suck at these.
It probably took 50 minutes to mill one of them.
Oh my God. And then bonding them was like a million different steps. And then I look at them afterwards and I'm like, please tell me this isn't mine. Please tell me this isn't mine. And I was like, it's functional, but it sucks. So I kind of put the CRAC away and he would do them once in a while for onlays. That was it. It was like an onlay machine. And of course, our Patterson reps would bug us and bug us and bug us. But we're just like, no, because right now I can prep a crown and walk away and go do other dentistry. And we're a pretty busy office, meaning like I'm on roller skates every day. We have 4 to 5 hygienists at a time. And, you know, we just have...
I'm just picturing you in a white lab coat and roller skates.
Roller skates.
That's a good image right there.
Right there, yeah.
That's the picture that I'll have on my
Photoshop that, put that on the, put the artwork for your episode.
So how big is the office? You have 4 or 5 hygienists and 2 dentists. So like 8, 10 ops?
10 ops, okay. I work out of 3 because one of them's like sleep apnea while I'm doing dentistry. But I'm like, how we're not going to have a patient sit there for, you know, half hour. But these are the old CRAC days. There's faster milling. And I was like, it's just so much easier for me to get up, go do more dentistry while my assistant's making the temporary. And then anyways, we had all the excuses as to why not. And then just teaching more and more with T-Bone and seeing what it was capable of. And it was actually after I saw him demo the Psycat Air, I was like, blew my mind. And I was totally against 3D for sleep apnea, totally closed-minded. Like, I'm only teaching with you because you don't teach that you can screen or diagnose right. from it.
Urgency and awareness.
Yes.
That's my words.
I kept coming back and talking to Dr. Lynn. And then the regional rep I sat next to at this fundraiser, this gala. And Landon came over and was like, we had lunch together just because he was a nice guy. And I listened to what he said. And I said, you know, I'm sold now. It's getting Dr. Lynn sold. That's the issue.
So you got Galileos as well?
Yep.
Which one? And the Full View Comfort Plus?
Orthoplus.
Yeah.
That's
the one I have too. That's
awesome.
And the
side cutter.
So you could see the TMJ or A-ray and everything with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Anyway, it was finally, I don't know, maybe I think I might have bought Dr. Lynn a bottle of whiskey or something and got him to agree. I'm not sure, but
he was probably like, okay, fine, let's do it.
Yeah. No, and I'll tell you what, like, he likes dentistry, but he doesn't geek out like most of us do. And it's so fun. He's like a little kid again, like a kid in a candy store or pay rate eating Sour Patch Kids. Like,
I know.
Excited.
It's very exciting. Now tell me, how do you have a system? How did you make, like, right now? And that's one of the things I want to talk to you about, Sully, is that when you get a CERAC, it's about having a team, a system that you can make this workflow work, because right. there's going to be a lot of time you're going to be wasting, because that's what I did. But now it's funny, at Affordable, I made them buy a CERAC machine and I started making abutments, and I went in like deep and trying to learn everything about
how's your staff CERAC reacted to it. Have they been pretty good? I mean, like, are they excited and are they kind of like, oh gosh.
My team?
Yeah. You mean? Yeah. Sorry. Excuse me. Gosh, you do spend a lot of time with T-Bone.
I know. I'll have to tell you a story about me getting called on. I think I called my dad's employees his girls one time, and someone called me on it. I was like, oh my gosh.
I feel like you're like, you could do that too if we can't do that.
I know. I'm part dude though, so
that's true.
But what about the team? Tell me how you're okay, gonna set up the team system.
Okay, so with 6 months miles, with...
Yeah, because you have, I noticed on your website, you have like a coordinator for 6 months miles, a sleep apnea coordinator, the whole nine yards, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so my team is so used to us delegating. Like, Dr. Lynn and I work because we don't have control issues. And the team loves having more to do and responsibility. So it wasn't a very big stretch to go to that. When Dr. Lynn's main assistant actually did E4D in her previous practice. So she was super excited to bring it on. It's not an issue, because here it's either you do it or you don't. Yeah. Or you don't
stay. You don't stay.
Yeah. Do they do it? Are they the only ones who do it? Like, does your 6 month smiles team member just do 6 month smiles and other ones don't do it? Or can they all do it, but she's kind of just more the primarily one?
She's a 25-year ortho vet.
Oh, you stole her.
Ooh, I used to golf with her, and I was there when she got the call that she...
So you don't have the treatment plan. She does everything. She's probably... Dr. Elliott, you want to go to 116?
Am I allowed to admit that on air?
Yeah, I know, right?
You should see me putting on donuts compared to her putting on donuts.
Oh, I believe it. When I first came back, I was like, nah, I could kind of get used to this ortho life. Walk in, say the patient, we're going to change this, this, and this, and see you in 4 weeks.
And you know what's so interesting about 6 months miles? And I'm glad that you are a provider, but these are patients that we've set up like four huge cosmetic cases that they're like an end-to-end bite that there was no way these veneers would have lasted. Then all the people that just have this one tooth that bugs them, there's no way they would go to the orthodontist. And we've referred them how many times. And now we get to, it's just awesome to have so many things for your patients available.
What I've seen is I think it increases my ortho awareness. And I've told my orthodontist, I'm like, look, it's not really cherry picking your patients, because they're not going. These are patients in the practice that we've either tried to get to go. You know, you really yep. realize why they, that how much they love to stay in your office.
In your practice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In your practice. And two, like you said, they're not going to go, you know, it gives us the flexibility. Cause if I know that I'm doing it for like veneers or whatever, I don't mind charging a little less or something like that. You know, like it yeah. gives, it just gives you, that's what all about CRAC. That's one of my favorite things about CRAC is kind of once you've gotten to the point where you've paid it off or you're kind of, you've hit the limit, you know, it gives you flexibility to do more like free dentistry, fun dentistry, help people
and
out.
I think you learn.
Your cost is so much less.
And you learn as you go and you do those cases. I feel like you even learn more and more and you want to do them. So yep. sometimes you just get a pay cut and
or
just try to.
Instead of giving your patient a flipper, you make a Maryland bread.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Like all those things. Like it's amazing. And I would say that the salesmen always tell you, so I don't believe salesmen. And when they say you're going to do 30% more dentistry by just by having a 3D, I'm like, uh-huh. If I did endo.
Same here. Refer.
Send them to me. I'll do it. Well, this has been a blast. We're going to have to do this yeah. again.
This is awesome. I love her. This is the first time I'm...
She's pretty cool.
Yeah.
She's pretty hip. Look at her.
We got to get you in Nashville. We got to get her to come and
we'll
speak.
We'll have to do a live. So this is why you should come to Dentist Blast Rental World.
Yeah, I'll be there. Vegas.
This doctor right September. Here is going to be presenting.
Who has two thumbs and will be at Zero World.
Yeah. You know who I want to come see? Simon Sinek is going to be
He's
there.
He's going to be there.
Oh, I love him.
I love him. Movie. Yeah, I've got all his CDs in my car.
So, jeez, what are those?
Right?
But no, it's been awesome.
You guys should come up to T-Bone's, me and T-Bone's course sometime.
Yeah.
In Raleigh.
When is it?
Is that up? Over?
There's one in November, I think.
We have one next week. He has two now. And there's sleep apnea, like 101, which is me and him. Anyone can take it. You don't have to be a CRAC owner at all. It's a great place for beginners. The other one he does is like sleep apnea for CRAC owners. And it's more just digital workflow type of thing, not the 101 kind of. So I'll be there in May and August and November.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very
Dr.
much
for, yeah. for taking some time.
We're going to hear more from her for sure.
Peace out. Oh, and give us a... Yeah.
I was going to give you my email address.
That's what I'm saying. We need your contact info.
How do we get... Yeah.
So it's AaronElliottDDS@gmail.com. Aaron Elliott is 2 L's, 2 T's, and 2 D's.
Nice. See what you did there. All right. Thank you so much, girl. Have a good night.
It was a blast.
We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. See ya.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.